Believe in yourself, believe in your body. Rock, 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 it's the self-esteem party.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Self-Esteem Party podcast, now on Sonar Network. I am your host, Alana Johnston, and I am so excited to be here today with producer slash husband slash roommate, Norm Sousa. Norm, how are you doing today on this rainy LA day?
Well, it's a new chapter for you and the podcast, so congratulations.
Thank you so much. We're very excited.
Is it Sonar Network or the Sonar Network?
I just say Sonar Network. Cool. If there's a the, I don't have the time, clearly.
Okay. Maybe can we just like abbreviate it, call it like we're on the NAR?
Ooh, or we're on the SO.
Yeah, okay, we'll figure that out.
Norm, how are you doing today? Scale 1 to 10.
Yeah.
How are you feeling about you?
Bad mood. Woke up in a bad mood.
Well, this is new.
But pretty classic for me.
I'd call it the norm of norm.
It's like, what is a Monday?
It's a day.
Yeah. I mean, we're recording this on a Monday. It's just a weird day.
Everybody get out of my face. Don't talk to me. It's one of those.
It is.
What's his name? Hates them. Garfield?
Is it Garfield?
He hates it.
And he loves that lasagna.
Loves that lasagna.
Lasagna comes on the weekend.
Or Zanya for short, if you need to save time.
Yeah, I'm going to do a podcast about Zanya on the NAR Network.
Zanya on the NAR Network.
Hey, welcome to Talking Za on the NAR Network. No, not pizza, lasagna.
Clear that one up.
Actually, that lasagna podcast idea put me in a good mood. Ooh. So, yeah, we'll say I'm a 3. Still dog shit number. Yeah, what's going on, though? It's like...
Yeah, not much.
Boring, you know?
What I say to you is welcome back to the pandemic.
Oh, I see.
Welcome back.
Yeah, because
you started in it, you took a break from it, and now you're back in it.
Right.
Yeah. And I've been here the whole time.
In the pandems.
Started from the bottom, remained.
Well, this is what happened a month ago now, I guess. It was like I was working and then I like stopped and I'm like, has it been this the whole time? This sucks.
Yeah, it's outrageous.
Yeah, and now I'm like, what do I even do with myself?
Well, you've been reading. You officially finished John Cassavetes. Congratulations.
I finished the John Cassavetes book. Yeah, a very sad ending.
Yeah, he dies.
Yeah, he dies.
Bummer. Okay. You finished that. You've started a new
book. Yeah, it was a little difficult because he's inspiring, yet I don't like his movies.
Right.
And I don't like a lot of the decisions he makes and a lot of his opinions I don't like. But I respect the work ethic.
Because he's exactly like you.
Because we're very similar. Yeah. Yeah.
I bet old Cassavetes would have come in at a 3.
I doubt he would even have the patience. He wouldn't, first of all, he wouldn't know what a podcast was and he probably wouldn't be even bothering himself with it.
Bless that mess.
But yeah, well, you're excited about your guest too, right?
I'm very excited about my guest. Long time in the making.
You like how he just transitioned away from me? So he
always. I love it. Leave you in your 3. I'm not even going to try to turn it around today because you know what? How about we ride it out? How about that for a change?
Yeah, because it's like, what, you know, whatever. I'll be in a good mood sometimes. You can't be in a good mood if you're always in a good mood, and that's your normal.
Yeah. Everybody, whatever, get out of my life.
Yeah, please.
I'm Norm's wife, but let's get to our guest. Very excited. Ladies and gentlemen.
Get out of my life. I'm Norm's wife.
Okay. God. Speak for yourself. I see that on a t-shirt. Okay, Norm.
I'm going to put it on a greeting card and then paste the greeting card to a t-shirt.
Hey, line up, huh? You know what I mean?
On the Zaw Network.
Ooh! On the NAR Zaw Network. No, Zanya.
The Zanya podcast on
okay,
the NAR Network.
Okay, time to get to the guest. Ladies and gentlemen, please join me in welcoming quietly to yourself, Nick Weiger, right after this break.
It's a self-esteem party. It's a self-esteem party.
Nick, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast that everybody's saying is the hottest podcast in this chair. How are you doing?
Yeah, I've been hearing this hottest podcast talk. It's really circulating in the pod arena. People can't stop talking about it.
The people can't stop talking about it. Everyone's going, what's the chair she's sitting in and how good is this for podcasts? And the answer is perfection. And I'd like to take a moment to thank all my fans that reviewed the podcast as perfect after I had announced that that's what should be happening. Guys, I'm getting those reviews and you are correct. Okay, Nick, here's what we do on this podcast. We like to start with a self-esteem party check-in. So on a scale of 1 to 10, how are you feeling about yourself today, last couple days, however long? What's up?
Well, I do have self-esteem issues in general, but I think lately I've been doing okay. I've been a little bit more like, hey, it's all right, you know? So I'd say, do we looking for some sort of gauge, some sort of scale?
Yeah, we're going to a 1 to 10, and you can give whatever number feels about right.
Okay, 1 to 10. And this is an exercise I learned from the Slate Political Gab Fest, which is another hot podcast. Not as hot as yours, but it's, you know, again, in the pod arena, people are talking about it. When you're doing a 1 to 10, if you omit 7, you'll get a more accurate, like, gauge, because people tend to gravitate towards 7 because it kind of has a neutral feel towards it, to it. So I'm going to say, with excluding 7... I'm going to give myself an 8 in self-esteem at the moment.
Oh, my God. First of all, let me just... Okay, there's so much to talk about. First of all, let me just say that scale thing about taking away the 7, I often go to a 7 when I would say, really, I'm feeling an 8. Like, if I'm... Because I look right. at 5... I look at 5 as neutral, right? Either or, you could go either way. And a 6 is a bit better than that, but a bit, like, if I go from a bit better, then I'm just better. And that would be an 8. Like, 8 to 10 is like A+, A-, like, you know what I mean? That's what that would be on the grading scale in school. Right?
Yeah, it's, well, I mean, that might just be a Canadian thing, because I think down here it'd be like 8 is 80%. That's a B-. But
80%
also,
is a B-? How can anybody graduate school?
Well, that's what leads to grade inflation. Everyone's just like, well, yeah, you got to give everyone everyone an A. I will say that it's, yeah, I think on a 10-point scale for me right now, yeah, 8 is probably, and I have the same sort of thing. Like, I'll tend to err on the low side, but if I'm being honest with myself, I kind of feel like 8. I'm doing okay mentally. I'm getting the exercise, which goes a long way towards making me feel better.
Mm-hmm. Me too. That's one of those things too that, like, because you know why I'm not surprised by your 8? I'm excited about your 8 because, you know, especially the way things are now, really, when I do this podcast, I don't know what number I'm going to get from people, right? You just don't know.
Right.
It's right. But it's like, I will say this, you had, and not just because your beautiful curtains in the background, very good energy. When we logged on, you had a smile on your face. So I'm not surprised to hear the 8. Not that you don't smile, but to be smiling now is kind of a big deal.
Yeah, I mean, there aren't a lot of reasons to smile these days.
Yeah.
But, you know, I live a charmed life. I'm very lucky that I can make an income from sitting in my stupid home office and talking into a microphone about fast food and whatnot. I think that it's, yes, so, and also you mentioned my smile. I've been trying to do that more. I've been like, oh, I'll try, because I notice if I see video of myself or I see like stills of myself, my neutral face looks very disengaged or bored or even like a little like irritated. And I'm like, that, yeah. I don't want to be giving off that energy.
I might go as far as to say you look disgusted with whatever you're looking at. I should know from all the times you've looked at me and I thought this isn't gonna end well. Yes, good for you for making an active effort to smile. That is, my therapist has told me this, it is something you actually have to like practice, because
right.
He's like, smiling doesn't come naturally. And I was like, I guess he's right, because when I'm in neutral, I'm not in a neutral smile. My face is like dead face, like kind of like what you were describing of your face as well. So it's like, to smile, you will instantly make yourself feel better. You're like tricking yourself into thinking there's a reason to smile. You know what I mean?
For sure. Yeah. And I tend to be a little bit robotic in my mannerisms and my you know, my voice, I kind of have a flat affect. I kind of can sound like a monotone at times, which some people find soothing. But other people are like, you seem annoyed. If I try to, sometimes I feel like, oh, I'm trying to emulate human behavior more than which sounds like fucking Dexter. But I'm trying to emulate human behavior, because it sometimes that doesn't come naturally to me.
Right.
But it does actually help my mental state to be like, oh yeah, I'll try to just like put a brave face on it.
Yeah. You know what? I have like the opposite problem where, cause naturally I'm like quite smiley or whatever. I got these big teeth. I got to air them out.
Right.
So I'm naturally smiley.
You got them chompers.
I've got these chompers for God's sakes. So I have it where sometimes I think people think I'm like not taking something seriously because,
right.
You know what I mean? Like I'm having like the opposite problem. Or if I am pulling a Weiger and like a little bit looking or seeming or sounding more neutral, people think I'm upset.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like neutral me is upset Alana to other people, even though I'm like, no, I for real get upset like anybody else would and can cry and what have you. But it's like that's a problem I have, is I think coming in with too much energy. And then maybe on your end, people are saying not enough.
Yeah, I think that, and just to speak for myself and you, oftentimes with you, I feel like I am terrified because you are a very assertive person, and you're very you're very outspoken and outgoing, and sometimes that energy like kind of puts me on my heels a little bit. But you're right that sometimes that what you're putting out externally doesn't necessarily match what you're feeling internally.
Oh my God, Nick,
yeah,
you're gonna love this. So, or maybe not love it, probably not love it. But when I had texted you to ask if you want to do the podcast, and like I hadn't heard back from you, and I said to Norm, I was like, I think he's mad at me, and he doesn't want to do the podcast, so he's ignoring me. And then of course you texted going, yeah, sounds great. When? Like you just like sent back the most normal response, and I was like so worried and upset because I often think, kind of like what you said, it's well, no, you didn't say it like this. I'm saying it like this, that I can come across as too much, right? I know that's not what you were saying. I have energy, but
right.
I think it's like too much to the point where it would be like a negative. So I was worried, and I guess I was a little bit right as you're on your heels. I was worried. I was like, oh God, he doesn't want to like talk to me and whatever. And then it was totally fine. And it's like, I think that when you have extremes like you and I that are very so different, I think there's a lot of room for interpretation, because we've been together, like when we went to Saskatoon in Canada, or as I like to call it, the Sass, we had like, remember we had that,
you were saying that a lot up there.
You
kept saying we're chilling in the Sass.
I couldn't help but notice that nobody's talked to me in 2 years ever since I dropped that cool nickname. But anyways, no, I'm just kidding. But like, when we were up there, you'll remember Mitch, of course, was having a classic sleep in, and you and I woke up and we worked out. We just happened to see each other in the gym, and then we got breakfast together, which was like really nice. Yeah. And it was like the realest time that I've had with you, because one, no one else was there. And I am somebody easily influenced by other people. If someone's being like a nut and too much, I'm right there with them. If somebody's being calm and whatever, like you are naturally calmer, I will go to you. So it's like we had a very calm, lovely breakfast, and I was like, oh my God, we've never really had a chance to connect before, because at the theater or when I do the podcast and Mitch is there, like there's always other people around, and that was the first time it was just you and me.
Yeah, it's interesting when it's someone you've spent a lot of time with and feel like you know reasonably well, and you're like, oh wait, I've never had a one-on-one interaction with you in like that kind, like I've never, like maybe a conversation, but it's in the context of we're at a gathering or there's a bunch of other people around, like actually just having like, oh, we're gonna sit down for a meal together, this is a foreign experience. But yeah, we had a lovely time. Just to go back to something you said earlier about when I wasn't you thought I was ghosting you, you thought I wasn't responding to you. So this speaks to something where like very often we're projecting something onto someone else and assuming like, oh, this is about me, it's not about them. Like, this is something like they are, the reason they are getting, I am getting this from them is because of me. It's my problem, and they know it, and that's why they're acting this way. That was as simple as, so I've been doing this thing that's been helping my mental health, which is that I don't use my phone at all on Sundays. And so you sent that text on a Sunday.
Yes.
And I didn't see it till the next day. So basically you had 24 hours of silence from me, which I get that can be unnerving in an era when we get instant responses for everything. But again, you thought, you took it as like, oh, this is some sort of personal slight, or he's mad at me, or he hates me, or doesn't want to do my show. But it was just as simple as like, oh, I just didn't check my phone that day.
Yeah, Norm had to give me a talking to and basically said the same thing. Not, obviously, we didn't know the phone thing, but he was just like, Alana, why are you making assumptions? And it was as simple as that. I made an assumption, to the point as well where, say you had written me back right away, if it was another day of the week and you wrote me back right away, I could make the assumption like, oh my God, Nick loves me. Like, either way, I'm making an assumption, and like, I can't do that because I got myself into such a tizzy, and it's so crazy. Like, why would you hate me all of a sudden? I just did your Christmas special. I'm like, why all of a sudden would he hate me? It doesn't make, you guys asked me, I've done every one of your Christmas specials, but I decided on Sunday you hated my guts all of a sudden. Like, what? Oh my God. Okay, Nick, this is something I want to know. So you had said that you, in general, struggle with some self-esteem issues, like everybody. But you had said that you can sometimes come across as kind of like monotone or neutral or like whatever else. Is that one of the causes of your self-esteem issue? Because for me, the being too much is one of the things that's taken a toll on my self-esteem. And I wonder if like that has happened to you, if people have said stuff to you and it kind of put you in your head or affected how you felt.
I mean, yeah, I think there's a tendency to ruminate over what may even be just like a passing remark from somebody and be like, oh, what was that about? And then you're turning it over in your mind a lot. But I think it's as far as what I project to others, I think that's more just like I'm sometimes not aware of like I this happens with Natalie, my lovely wife, sometimes where like I will seem like she thinks I just like don't give a shit about something, or that I'm disengaged, when really like, no, this is just my natural energy. And it's sometimes like, oh wait, I should put an extra little effort into this to make it seem like I am, you know, to convey what I'm feeling inside, because that doesn't necessarily come across naturally. I'm kind of at the same even level a lot of the time. I just want to describe this as, I had a friend in college who just described me as like, I feel like your energy is just like good. Like, it's just like, mm-hmm. you're like, I'm good. But mm-hmm. sometimes you're just like, I'm good feels like it's like, well, that's just everything's at the same level. You know what I mean? It doesn't feel like you're there's ups and downs, even though I process ups and downs internally, like I'm fucking bungee jumping off a bridge. Externally, it all seems like everything's pretty neutral.
Yeah, I think that would make it even like, I just know for me and like getting to know you, and maybe from Natalie, it could make it a little bit confusing, because if I've seen you react good, you're regular, right, to one situation, and then a very different situation happens and you're still good, you're like, wait a minute. Well, which is it?
Right.
And I can see the confusion, because Norm is a lot like you, not neutral, but a little more even keel, right? Like, he'll get angry about stuff, but he's mostly joking. He's pretty in the house. He keeps it pretty calm, right? And
yeah.
I've had the same problem as Natalie, where I'm like, do you even care about this? But it's like, he has to keep reminding me, and I have to remind myself too, that just because I would react in one way and I care, doesn't mean that you don't care because you're reacting in a different way that I've just happened to see before.
Right. Yeah. It's, by the way, I should mention, so for people listening, our recording setup is, we're doing this through Zoom. We're doing an audio call, and you're using Norm's account. So what I'm seeing on my screen is just your very handsome husband's headshot as I'm talking to you. And I got to be honest, he's dreamy.
Norm was like, you can change that. And I went, we'll just let it roll. So just so you know, this was a choice. I thought, you know what? He didn't text me back. He hates my guts. He probably doesn't want to see my face. And then I threw Norms right up there. He probably hates my face. Yeah, thanks for letting everybody know that, because the people, you know, they have a right to know what's inspiring you in this conversation, and it's Norm's headshot.
For sure. That's interesting to you know, because I like Norman. We've hung out a little bit, but like I don't think either of us know each other well. That's interesting to hear that he has a similar sort of obviously not identical, but a similar sort of disposition.
Yeah, he's just, and it's so interesting because, yes, he'll be listening to what I'm saying to the point where in a later conversation or later in the day, he can like repeat it back. And I'm like, oh, he was listening or like whatever. But it's just like, I think that's, I got to be honest with you, Nick. I don't know if it's the same for you guys. It's one of the only reasons and ways that we work, because I am so easily affected by other people and he's not. And he really balances me out, because I've been with people that were like me and it was just sheer mania. But then I've been with people that were like quiet and shy, and it was like, you know, me walking around like their every part of their body is a couple of doormats. You know what I mean? And I'm wearing all the shoes. You know how that goes. You've been there. Come on.
Yeah, I don't, you know, it's certainly that's just maybe the opposites attract cliche has something to do with energy more than anything.
Mm-hmm, yeah, that could make sense, because it's something that's missing from you and somebody else is kind of like filling it in. So I don't naturally have that. So now I have an example of what that's like, and I can draw from that and be like, oh, Elena, what would Norm do in this? How would he act in this? Like, he was laughing in my face about all the things I thought could be up with you not texting back. Meanwhile, the real excuse is one that is so good, I should probably take it on as my own as well by not doing this Sunday phone thing. Like, it's such you have the best reason for not texting back. It's everything that this podcast is about, self-care. I mean, Nick, hello. How are you not hosting this?
What? Yeah, 100%. I mean, it's... So to talk about that specifically, to drill down the phone thing, I got a book, and the book, the title is so fucking corny, but it absolutely worked for me. I got this book called How to Break Up with Your Phone, because I found myself, particularly in quarantine, like buried in my phone for like, my screen time was like astronomical. It was like a full work day of just like looking at my phone and looking at fucking bullshit that was making me mad, you know? And while I had, you know, cause I was not working, just podcasting from home, and you know, I know it provides me an income, but I have a hard time even calling it work, cause it's not that much work. I had time to do hobbies and stuff that I would like to do, and I just wasn't doing it. I was just like looking at my phone. I was like, I have some sort of phone addiction right now. So I got this book called, again, the title is How to Break Up with Your Phone. And it's very new agey. It's very like just like mindfulness shit that you could dismiss as hoo-ha if you wanted to. But it just has some like 30 discrete steps, one per day that you take, that culminates in not using your phone for an entire day. And then you can choose whether or not you want to make that a regular weekly practice or not. And it, like, I just did it step by step. I was like, you know what? I got all this time. I'm just going to fucking do it step by step and do every single thing that the book says, no matter how corny I think it is, to have a fucking journal and write down what I'm feeling about my phone today. And it honestly made a huge difference in both that I'm like less buried in my phone, not that I'm completely removed from it. The full day off I take for my phone every Sunday is like the best day of my week, because I'm just like present and I'm just, you know, whatever, going for walks and reading and watching a fucking TV show I like and playing video games and spending time with my wife. Like, we're just like, I'm just like there. And then also I like out like all the shit that all the slot machine shit bullshit. I'm using the verbiage from the book that you got a slot machine in your pocket, but all that sort of like like a metrics that I'm chasing and you know, the fucking social media stuff I'm buried in, that's all kind of gone away. So it's been huge for my mental health. It's made a big tangible improvement on just feeling better by not being buried in bullshit that ultimately is not worth my time.
Yeah, that's the key that I think is happening right now, is we've all forgotten how valuable our time is because we have no sense of time anymore for the last like year, right? And it's so interesting because it's like, what you were saying, the biggest benefit of not being on your phone is that you're present in what you're doing. And I don't really think we realize, like, when you're watching a show or a movie and if you're on your phone and looking, it's like, I'm missing full parts of the crown. Like, for example, who's the queen? Because I'm not paying attention because I'm sitting there on my phone. And I'm on season 4, Nick. Who is this lady? But it's like,
I'm sorry, you cut out, Alana.
Oh, I just said I didn't know who the queen was again. Really got to hit that home that everybody knows.
Oh.
But yeah, I think you're right in that, like, it's important to value your time and show yourself that your time is valuable, because I have never been so enraged at social media as I have in the last year. And I'm enraged because I'm absorbing more of it than I ever have. So I think it always got to me, like a lot of people, but it's getting to me more because I'm consuming it more. So it's like this book that you're talking about and this day off, which I can see why you have to work towards it, because it is a pretty big commitment, a full day, because you would be, and I'm guessing you chose Sunday because work emails and are usually Monday to Friday. Is that one of the reasons why you chose Sunday?
Yeah, it's a little easier for me, and it's usually kind of also a day my day of rest from exercise. I usually just go for a walk, so it just feels like a little calmer too.
Right. Yes, that's good for you for taking that break from exercise. Because I know you and I are both exercise people or whatever, but it's like, I've been pushing myself really hard because I keep going, well, you have nothing else to do. And now it's like my knees are broken. And I'm like, why did I do that?
Yeah, it's so tempting to overtrain when you've got big gaps of time. And then I've just got to be like, oh, wait, I don't need to push it that hard. What am I? I'm not a fucking athlete. You know, I'm not training for anything. I just need to maintain maintain equilibrium.
Yeah, I feel like there's a part, I don't know if you relate to this. A part of it for me is associated with guilt, in the sense that I'm like, well, you're not doing anything else, Alana. And it's like, I've associated it with like feeling bad, or like coming out of this pandemic, I'm like, well, you're not going to come out with anything. And at least you should come out with 17 abs. I like to keep things uneven. I like to have one ab at the top and then the rest goes down. But I like one that stretches all the way. Disgusting. Like, I swear to God, if Norm ever listens to me do this, he's done with me. I promise you. Let me just say.
Does he not listen to your podcast?
No, he does. I make jokes that he doesn't, but he does because, you know, he wants to hear the guests, right? And hear like what they're saying or whatever. And like, I'll always come. I come into this being like, oh my God, it's going to be so fun and this, and this. And then it's always so much more heartfelt than I had like anticipated, which makes it like so much better. And I think that's why he listens, because I think he's listening for like, you know what I mean? Like, because you guys have met, and when you guys meet, and when, you know, Norm was coming around and meeting everybody, it's, you usually just do jokes, like when someone's just around in a social setting. So to hear them on the podcast really like open up, it's like, you're not going to see, well, obviously it's different with UCB, but pretend it was open, you're not going to see Norm there and then be like, hey, I'd really like to talk to you about this book I'm reading and my 30 days of discreet moves. And he'd be like, no thanks.
Right.
At a social setting.
There's a tendency to just go into bits, and exactly. that's honestly exhausting for me. You generally will find that when you're around other people who are in comedy. So to get back to what you were saying about social media, yeah, that's a big thing. Like, I don't have social media apps on my phone anymore, except for Reddit. I still have Reddit, but I don't really use Reddit in the same way. Like, I don't post on Reddit. I just like like read subreddits that I'm interested in. Mm-hmm. But like, I would find myself as like, why the, it really took some distance for me. Like, why the fuck do I know who Kurt Eichenwald is? And why do I get mad by what Kurt Eichenwald says? And why do I think it's a good use of my time to like read everyone's dunks on Kurt Eichenwald and send my Kurt Eichenwald dunks? Like who gives a shit? This guy is nobody who just exists to say dumb bullshit and then be trolled by others. And I guess that's as fine, a good a way of, to spend your time as any. Cause ultimately, like, you know, it's all whatever. We're all just passing time before we die. But I'm not getting any joy from this. I'm just getting fucking frustration. I'm just getting fucking like I'm just turning into like this ball of like rage. And then that's getting directed. Then I'm looking for other targets for my rage. And then I'm just like kind of in the cycle of just, you know, refreshing and seeing someone's bad take and wanting to engage in it. Or seeing someone's good take and wanting to boost it. And I'm just like, well, who gives a shit? This is so not doing anything for anyone, certainly not for me. So I'll spend that time doing something I like.
Yeah, I think online, we're all, hear me out on this, we're all looking for a fight. And here are the different ways.
Right.
One, to actually fight with someone to say, I disagree with your opinion, right? Or two, fighting to have the best opinion, when we're all talking about whatever's trending, or three, fighting to have the funniest, most viral tweet, you know what I mean? Or promoting right. your friend's funniest, most viral tweets. And the whole thing feels like we're all just about to pounce. Like it just, and it's like, I honestly am at the point where it's like, I get anxiety tweeting and I hate to say it, or posting to Instagram, whatever the case, other than like promoting to be like, oh, new episode of the podcast, which like, you know, if they listen, they listen, they know when it comes out, but you just do that to do it because that's part of the game. But it's like,
yes,
the social and personal stuff, I'm so nervous that I'm going to say the wrong thing or do the wrong thing that I just do little chime-ins here and there, or a couple of what I call safe tweets that are like essentially about nothing and only associated with me so as not to like offend somebody. But it's really stressing me out. And for what? For who? You know what I mean?
Right. And yeah, one, I get the same sort of thing. And I'm just like, is this going to be like what you were saying about the text, me not texting you back? Is like, is this going to be misinterpreted? What if someone does, you know, what someone replies to this and they're trying to just like, yes, and the bit, but it seems like they're mad at me or they think it sucks. I'm just like, you know, like, or someone's just saying like, this sucks. Like, and I'm going to care about that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just like, what am I bothering with any of this for? And then also when a post like does well, I'm like, I don't know how much satisfaction I get from this. Like
yeah.
I've had like, you know, bit like viral success with fucking tweets. Not that that's any sort of brag, because it's nothing to be proud of, but I'm just like, this isn't like, I'm walking on clouds all day. Because I got, you know, quote tweeted by Jaleel White or whatever. You know, I'm just like, all right, well, that was something to do.
Yeah, and it's kind of crazy, too, because if you compare to what it is online versus what it would be in person. So, like, for example, if I did a tweet and then I get a bunch of likes or whatever, and then that makes me feel good where I'm like, oh, my God, everybody likes me. I'm popular. If I had a birthday party and it'd be the equivalent of me walking around going, is this the best birthday party you've ever been to? Like, that's what I'm doing. And that's crazy. That's crazy. You would never be that insecure in person. But meanwhile,
yes,
I'm doing it online because I'm hiding. And like, that's part of why I like doing this podcast, because one, great way to catch up with friends, right? Obviously, I'm sure you and Mitch have the exact same thing where it's like, I know you guys are talking fast food, but you're catching, you're shooting the shit, you know, you're seeing what's up with your guest, right? So it's fun,
yes,
to be able, and now more than ever, I'm sure you guys have the same now that we don't see anybody. Now it's like, it's the social event of the week to do a podcast.
Yeah. Especially because, and this is anyone, you know, I imagine this is, your audience is mostly adults, but maybe you got some cool teens or some kids who listen to it. But as an adult, it's like crazy that you can have a friendship with someone, even in normal times, and be like, oh, wow, I haven't seen this person in 6 months.
Yes.
Like, that's just, like, time just passes like that. We're just, like, we've been working or whatever, and, hey, it's someone I would say is my friend, but in person, an in-person interaction is, like, a, you know, a twice-a-year occasion. And so, yeah, you end up having this with the, in our current hellscape, it's like, oh, yeah, I haven't talked to this person, I haven't had a conversation with this person in, like, a year plus, and now we're going to sit down and we're going to have, like, a fucking, you know, hour-long chat. It does have its own value for that reason, and then you get to monetize it, baby. That's what it's all about.
I'm in it for the mono. But, yeah, it's interesting what you said about a year plus, because I've had guests on where I'm like, I hadn't seen you for a year previous to the year shutdown. You know what I mean?
Right.
So like 2 years, because it is those social events and being, you know, someone as I'm getting older and an adult and I become more, you know, grumpy and like whatever else, I had kind of not been going to social events as much previous to the shutdown, obviously not knowing a shutdown was coming. So I took it for granted. So I was already like not seeing that many people. I was kind of just in this smaller world or whatever. Cause think about it. When you know, you're getting older, there's not the parties that we used to go to, like at UCB, and it's like, oh, we are all going to be there. It's like, none of us were going to that anymore. That was the next generation now who's going to those parties. So it is hard to see people. And it was like, I would see you, like, say, let's take you and Mitch, right? I would see you guys around the theater all the time. And then it was like, oh, yeah, you don't really get to see each other hang out unless you're recording the podcast or you're all happen to be booked on the same show or something like that.
Right.
And that's like, it's crazy because we're in an industry where it seems like everybody's like your close and best friend. But really, I'm like, we actually are quite separated and can weirdly be doing the exact same thing and never see each other. It's kind of like, because you can't, you have work friends, but because your work always changes, so do your friends.
Right, 100%. But I mean, like, even if you're in like a more, you know, square job, a job that's not in the entertainment industry, I think the same sort of things apply. I mean, the same sort of it's someone that you used to see every day, and then they get a job somewhere else, and then you're not seeing them, you're rarely interacting with them. You know, it's so much as just like who you happen to be sharing the same. You just happen to be sharing the same space with somebody, and that ends up being someone that you're close to for a time. And it's very, very you can really sometimes realize how fragile and how tenuous those connections actually are.
Yeah, it's like proximity friends. And
right.
It's really interesting because I am such a proximity person, and I've moved numerous times. Like, you know, I lived in Toronto, I lived in Chicago, back in Toronto, then LA, you know, moved a couple times. And I feel like I've started over every single time. And to relate it to self-esteem, I've started over because I'm like, I'm not going to be that way anymore that I was. All those negative things I didn't like about myself, now I'm going to be this way, and I'm going to make new friends, and they're only going to know me as this. And I used to like pull away from people and like, you know, purposely move for some fresh starts for that exact reason. But of course, it comes with you. Like, everything you do comes with you. Like, it follows you, your any insecurity and like whatever else you have. And now I kind of realize that it's like, I have to work to hang on to those friendships, and I can't run from them because they're getting fewer and fewer as you get older and older. And like you said, like a new job, or maybe people have kids and all that kind of changes. And I'm like, oh, I got to hang on to these things regardless of how embarrassed I am of how I acted when we were those proximity friends. You know what I mean?
Like, right.
Yeah, I don't know if you have, I don't know if you, like, you tell me how much you experience that, but like, I know coming from Canada, like coming from, it is easy to leave people behind when they're in a whole other country. But do you have that, like, because I don't actually know where you're from. Where are you from?
I'm from here. I've lived in LA County my entire life.
Oh my God.
Unless you want to count a 12-week internship, I worked way down south in San Diego. That's the only time I've ever actually had a residence that was outside of LA. I mean, I consider myself a lifelong LA resident of the greater LA area. I grew up in Long Beach, California. Certainly Southern California is the only place I've known. Even that, it's very easy to lose touch with people. I live 40 minutes from where I grew up, from my childhood home. You lose touch with people because they move elsewhere, or even if they're still back in the same place, it's just like it's easy to fall out of touch with people. Also, I just naturally have a problem of I'm not great about maintaining friendships. I'm not great about maintaining relationships. It's very easy for me to just sort of. Because I naturally gravitate towards like solitude anyway, or just spending time with Natalie. Because you know we have our own we have our own little union, we have our own little like energy of just like hanging out together. Mm-hmm. That it's very easy for me to just fall out of touch with even recent friends. So I will say that it's not just geographic proximity that causes, like, you still have to work at it. No matter where you are, no matter if you're still in the same area you grew up in.
Okay, so real deal question then based on that. Do friendships and connections matter to you, or is it something that you've practiced, which you now enjoy, but you've practiced as part of a social norm?
I think I think, by the way, it really threw me off that you said norm just as I'm looking at Norm's face. Social norm makes me think of like a character Norm would have on his SNL reel.
Yes, social norm Sousa. That's what I'm talking about. Are you friends with my husband? Do you care about him? This is Nick. Listen, tread lightly on this answer because this is going to hit him like a ton of bricks.
Norm is a prince. Would love to spend more time with Norm. Anytime I see Norm, it's always a delight. I will say that. Yes, I sometimes have trouble working, it's not that I don't appreciate friendships, it's just that I can get comfortable being alone, or get comfortable not seeing people, or get comfortable not having these sort of IRL social interactions. Mm-hmm. I actually realize I'm a fairly social person when it comes to texting. Absent my phone free Sunday, I'm just like, oh, I'm in group texts all the time, or like I'm in Discords or Slacks. Like I'm just like, I communicate with people. But in terms of face to face, it's like I can be a weird disengaged person who just kind of is sitting there quietly, not making eye contact and just sort of still being in my own world. That's a very rambly way of saying that. Yeah, I do kind of have to work at it. It doesn't necessarily come natural to me where I'm a people person.
I think that's okay. My dad's the same way, and I've talked to him about it before. Like, he has no friends, and I've talked to him about it before, and he's like, I really don't care. He's like, I have fun with your mom. You guys are great to talk to. And he goes, and I have these magazines. And I was like, okay, he's got the PC computer magazine. He's in a good mood. He does not care, in a good way. Like, I think for him, when he was a principal, my parents are retired now and they moved to Toronto, so that's why their friends are all back home in Orangeville. And like you're saying, with your friends that are only 40 minutes away, you surprisingly can lose touch, which is what happened with them. But I think he felt a lot of pressure, he had told me, when he was a principal, because, you know, the staff parties and all this kind of stuff, social event that they go to. And I think he felt a lot of pressure to like be on, because it doesn't come naturally to him, and it does to my mom, who I'm a lot alike. And I think he felt more stressed out in a social situation than being by himself.
For sure. I mean, that definitely, I can have big time social anxiety and just feel like, oh, I'm trapped at this thing. I just need to get out of here. So yeah, especially at large gatherings, that can be troublesome for me. It sounds like your dad and I would be friends.
Honestly, if he had a vacancy for a friend, sure. He doesn't, so don't get excited. He's really enjoying having no friends, so please leave my dad alone. But yes, you guys would get along, because my dad loves to talk about, like, this is what my dad likes to talk about: technology, the computer and like whatever Great. Else. He likes to talk about, you know, TV, like your classic Perry Mason, The Mentalist, which these are all shows I am sure you love. And he also...
yeah, that's my demographic. And then, it's my age range.
And then he likes chips. He's like, I'll give me those Miss Vicky's jalapeno or sea salt and vinegar any day. And I'm like, you can't argue with that. Yeah, you can't argue with that. He lives an easy life. It doesn't take much for him to be happy. And sometimes I wish I was more like him because, like, if I have social anxiety, which I also get, I think everyone to a certain extent in situations gets it, and I go out and feel the pressure to be on, to act like my mom or act like how people would normally expect me to act. And I think that it's like, I wish I didn't feel so guilty when I didn't want to be that way or act that way. I wish I could be more confident like my dad and be like, this is it. Yeah, I'm at home by myself. I don't care. What's wrong with that? I wish I could say what's wrong with that more, you know?
Right. Yeah. That you're worried, I guess, about how other people are what other people are thinking about you, which I can fall into.
Yes.
Let me ask you this, and talking about you for a second, you have social anxiety sometimes, mm-hmm. but you're a performer, you're someone who seems very comfortable in front of an audience. Do you ever get like performance anxiety?
Never, not once.
Yeah, I feel kind of similar. Like, I've had it before. I've had it when I was like, oh, the stakes are kind of high. And especially if I have to memorize lines, because I'm horrible at memorizing lines. I can't keep the words in my head. Those have been times when I've gotten legitimately anxious before something. But these days, in general, I'm just like, oh, yeah, this is no problem. I'll step in front of a... especially doing a live podcast, which you and I have done done together in front
That's
of audiences.
Right.
It's just like,
That's right.
Yeah, we're going to...
Improv.
Yes, and it's just like, oh, we're going to step on stage in front of hundreds of people with nothing prepared, and we're just confident we know what to do. Like, it's just like, those aren't moments where we're on one ass cheek, like, with chattering teeth backstage. We're just sort of kind of casually shooting the shit and just continue that energy on stage in front of people, which I think for a lot of people would be their nightmare. But for me, I'm like, I'm more comfortable doing that than I am... after the show, hanging out with a bunch of people.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
Oh, my God. Yes, dude. The going to Birds, the bar, after a show
yes.
used to, like, cripple me. It was too much for me. And it's also, like this is how, I wonder if you have it, this is how I knew I was supposed to be in comedy, because it was the only thing that didn't stress me out physically on stage. You know, there's a lot of work that goes into our industry. So, you know, that stuff can be stressful and stuff. But physically being on stage in front of people and like yammering on was like, it was almost like the only time I felt peace, because I wasn't worried
right.
about anything else. I'll tell you, Nick, even when I tested for SNL many moons ago, still waiting to hear, even when I tested for SNL, I was doing push-ups outside the door. I could see Lorne Michaels' face, just the one, and I was doing a bunch of just the one. Hey, guys, I know there's a rumor that Lorne Michaels has more than one face. No, guys, it's just the one face. I'm going to clarify that on the record. But I was, like, so excited.
I think you can be kind of two-faced myself.
But physically, just the one. But yeah, I was like nothing but excited. And maybe I should have been nervous. I don't know. Maybe
right.
if I was nervous, I would have done something different and maybe I would have got the job. But for me, the way I saw it was this. This could be the only time I ever get to be on that stage, because you audition on the stage. It could be the only time I ever get to be on it. Might as well fucking enjoy it. And I did.
Right.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Contra what I was saying earlier, I do think in that situation, knowing the stakes, I would be a little bit like, oh, this is really something. So that's amazing to hear that you were just like completely still just, you know, just taking her easy. What was that experience like? Like the run up to it, the aftermath, like, did you feel like, oh, did you feel good going into it? Did you feel good coming out of it? Do you remember anything about being in the moment?
Yeah. Okay. So basically, I had a... Okay, actually, I'm so excited you asked this question. I kind of have a crazy story. So I SNL had asked me to bring my solo show I had to New York for some producers to come see. I went, there's only like eight people in the audience. I was like, whatever. My parents came and met me for the show. in New York that drove up from Toronto or drove down, which was very nice of them. And then I went back to Canada with them, did the show, said hi, didn't think anything of it, right? I was like, okay, great. I'm going to go to Canada. It's Canada Day. I'm going to go have a party with my friends. This is going to be so much fun. So we went and I did ecstasy and I got a call the next day from my manager going, okay, great. SNL is bringing you into test. And I was like, what? And I was still on drugs. And I was like, I don't understand. I was like, I don't understand. And he goes, they want all new material and you're going in 2 days. And I was like, what? So I had to fly back to LA because all my costumes and everything's there. I have to go back and get it all, right? And I have to practice. I finally come off the drugs. I fly back home. I'm like, we're coming up with all this stuff. I'm like flying back to New York, writing it on the plane with this Australian couple who was super nice and helping me. And I'm like writing all this stuff on the plane. They were like looking up references for me, like all this kind of stuff. Cause for impressions, they were like looking up who could I play. Like, this is how nice these people were. I'm like freaking out. So I'm so stressed out, right? And then I go to LA, practice, then like I said, fly to New York. And what you do is you're in the hotel and you don't know what time you're going to test. You get the call that day and you don't know what time you're going in and you don't know who else is there. So I got the call. I'm going in at 7 that night. I'm like shitting bricks. I'm like, oh my God, I'm not ready. I don't have this. I blah, blah, blah. I'm like so stressed out. Like, this is what I was saying, all the stress leading up and before and all that work you have to do. And then I go in. Everybody is so nice. They're all so nice. You go into your dressing room and everything. And I'm like quietly waiting. I go into the hair and makeup. I actually end up seeing two pals from Chicago, which was really cool. Again, you don't know who's there, right? And then you're like, oh my God, hi. Right. And you say your hellos and everything like that. And you go back to your room and they bring you in. And before you go in, and keep in mind, everyone, this was a couple years ago, so I don't really know how it goes now, right? But this is what it was for me. You're standing with the producers. You can hear the person ahead of you do their performance. You can hear them.
Oh, wow.
And you're right outside the door. And I'm standing with the producers. And then I started doing my push-ups. And then I was like, I'm like, oh my God, what am I going to do? I walk out there. When it was my turn, I start laughing while I'm walking. And I went, oh, fuck. Because I was like, Lord Michaels was 10 feet from me. And the whole thing is filled with producers. But all the lights are on, so you can't see anybody. And I was like, oh, fuck. Which for sure I mic'd everybody heard me say. I was like, and I just said it because I was like, oh, fuck, I can't believe I'm here. Like, it was like, I was in shock. Anyways, they're like, cameraman's like, you ready? And I was like, yeah, I'm ready. Oh my God. Best, like, what? I mean, I had written 5 minutes. I maybe did the whole thing in 3.5 because I was so out of my mind. And I tell you what, best experience of my life. I got a laugh from Lorne Michaels so long I had to wait to do my next bit. I had to wait for them to stop laughing. It was a 10-second impression of my mom. Nailed it. And then, you know, didn't really hear much after that. A couple little chuckles, which they tell you is to be expected. So all in all, it was a fantastic experience. Then Seth Meyers comes afterwards and introduces himself and was like, fantastic. Cut to, yes, it was fantastic. A year later, I see Seth Meyers at a restaurant who's with a friend of mine that was writing on the show. And I had said hello and whatever. And then I got this phone call with some bad news of someone back home was in bad health or whatever. And I was like trying to leave the restaurant to go get the call outside because I couldn't hear. And I walked into a giant glass door and fell down.
Oh my God.
And Seth saw me and I was too embarrassed to go to the table afterwards. So that I say that's my whole SNL experience, including the 1 year follow up.
Wow. Wait, what? Yeah. What did you, were you knocked out? Like, how badly were you hurt?
Like, the hostess ran over to me and had to help me get up, and I had a massive bruise on my forehead. Like, after.
Oh my God.
It was like hard. It was bad. And it was like, but I was like distracted, and it was one of those glass doors, like top to bottom, right? So you can't really see the outline of it. And oh my God, it was so embarrassing. I pray I get on his show one day because I am going to tell him that story and be like, do you remember when I walked into a glass door? He probably doesn't, but imagine if he did, I'll die.
Oh yeah.
I'll die.
Yeah, I thought about it every day. Craziest shit I ever saw.
He's like, weird, I started my whole show so you could come on and tell me your great story. But yeah, fantastic experience. And when I was physically on stage, was not nervous. I just enjoyed myself, and really everybody there made it fantastic. It was not intimidating of somebody psychologically trying to do that to me. If I was intimidated, it would have been because I did it to myself. Like, everyone was really great.
Right.
And I didn't expect that. You don't know what you're going to get. And I was like, oh, wow, this was like, so, half you guys are nicer than casting directors in LA. So, you know, some of them aren't always the nicest. Everyone has a horror story or two. But yeah, it was great. Thanks for asking. I've never told that story.
I loved it. That's an amazing story. You should tell it everywhere. I will say that and then that's the kind of thing where when you, and I imagine doubly so as an actor, when you don't get, because I'm much more of a writer. The acting work I've ever booked has been basically by accident, and it's, you know, amounts to very little. But when you don't get something, I think this is probably universal across it, even outside of the entertainment world, of just like you think it's like something that was wrong with you or something you did wrong or some, and sometimes it can be that, but very often it's something arbitrary. Like, it could just have been as simple as like they were just like, we've already got a woman with curly hair. You know what I mean? Like, that could have been it. Sometimes it can be that arbitrary where it's something that you can't even control, and that ends up being the deciding factor in whether or not you get this opportunity.
You know what? You're totally right. When I had tested, Kate McKinnon had been hired the year before, and I was like, you guys kind of already have a better version of me. I'm not really that worried about it. Because she's amazing, but her and I also do big characters and stuff like that, so we definitely have that in common. And so maybe that's why I wasn't as nervous, because it might have taken some of the pressure off. I was just happy to be there, but I was also like, okay, Alana, but you got to remember there's big characters on there, and if not this job, potentially another job, just be happy that you're here. You know, coming from a little small town in Canada, it was a huge deal for me. It was like a dream come true. It really was. And I'm sure if I had gotten the job, I, you know, would have done Ecstasy and then found out that morning that we had the show that night. They'd be like, Alana, why do you do this every week? And I'd be like, what?
I know from seeing your one woman show that like you've dabbled in some like mind altering substances. I've never done ecstasy. The hardest drug I've ever done is like marijuana. I've never done anything like that. And now I feel like I'm too old where. Any of these things would just give me a panic attack. I've just kind of reached the point where, like, I'm just going to go into the ground never having done mushrooms, you know?
Yeah, I'm going to say, and listen, everybody, you want to do drugs, go nuts. But I'm going to say this about with Molly and all that kind of stuff. Doing it in my 20s, it was like 3 days for me to recover. Imagine when you're older, like when you have a hangover in your 20s, you're sick, you're whatever the next day, you're fine by the night. When you have a hangover in your 30s and older, you're like hungover for 2 to 3 days, right? So if the drugs at 100%. That time took me like about imagine how long your recovery would be now. Imagine, and it depletes your serotonin. So it's like, for me, I'm on real live meds now that actually are prescription and work. And I'm like, I can't mess that stuff up anymore because I really don't know what's going to happen in the aftermath. So it's like, I wouldn't recommend it. I have a lot of great stories, a lot of careless sex on these drugs I can tell you about if you need them. We'll do another episode, a follow-up. But my advice to you, don't do it. don't do like
the chemical. Yeah, I can't imagine chemical. It would work out well for me.
Yeah, the chemical drugs, especially you. Oh my God, Nick, I can't even imagine, because when I did Ecstasy, I kind of got really quiet and in my own world where I was like, everything's the best. But if you're already coming in as that and then you do it, what's going to become of you? What will happen? I wonder.
Yeah, I really wonder, like, what would actually happen to me? Because you know what, the drug I indulge in the most is, it is a drug, is alcohol. And that does kind of shift my disposition towards, I'm a lot more outgoing than I would be normally. But yes. Something that tends to make you more reflective, or you know, make you more and then that's like, instead of working against my tendency, that's amplifying what I already have. Yeah, that could be troublesome.
I think it would be. And again, that recovery. And it's like, you know, especially now, if you've done all this work with like self-care and like all this kind of stuff, it's like, it really is damaging. It's not being good to yourself. We're not supposed right. to put that stuff in us. I have a different, like, you know, with alcohol and weed, it's just such a different effect. Of course, we can abuse everything and we can always take things too far. I'm not discrediting that. I understand for a lot of people, sobriety has really helped them. And like, I've had stints myself of doing things and trying different things like that. But it's like, just those chemical drugs, you don't know what's in them. So the difference yes. is, if you're having wine, you know what's in it. If you're having MDMA, you don't know what's in that. And that's a problem.
Yes. Yeah. I guess that's just that since this stuff is still illicit and you know, it should be. Is it decriminalized in Canada?
No.
I know they got much more liberal drug laws.
No. It's still illegal. Yeah. Those drugs. Yeah. Still illegal. Mm.
Wait, what is decriminalized? Is pot decriminalized nationwide?
Yeah.
Okay.
But we have stricter rules than you guys. But yeah,
that is a thing.
We have stricter rules than you guys. Our rules are like the way that you can buy it. Same with alcohol. Like, you know how you guys can have alcohol in all your grocery stores and every corner store and you can buy it all night? You can't do that in Ontario. Yeah. You can't do that in Ontario. So we just have different rules up there. It's legal, but it's different rules in how you can get it.
So what you said about alcohol, that varies a lot state by state and city by city in the states, where it's like in certain states, it's like you have to sell prepared food to sell alcohol. Alcohol sales, liquor sales. We're in Tennessee, and it's just like they just stopped selling all alcohol at midnight. So, like, you can go to a bar that's open after midnight, but their last call is later than when they stop alcohol sales. But you can't, like, go into a liquor store and buy buy, like, some vodka if it's 12:01 a.m. There's also weird rules. That's like I think actually LA is pretty lenient in terms of when you can buy and sell alcohol, because you can basically buy alcohol at a grocery store and you can buy it up until, you know, last call, which is like 2 a.m., 1:30 or 2 a.m. But in a lot of states, it's not like that.
Oh, I didn't know that. I thought it was just, I guess that makes sense. I don't know why I assumed it was the same, but I just thought it was like a nationwide thing because of all the money you can make. Selling it all the time.
Yeah, but there's also like very puritanical, like if you're in like states like in Utah, it's all LDS there, and so they have like I think that the liquor stores are state run and you can all and they're only open until like 8 p.m so it's just like it's very difficult to actually get out, or it's not impossible, but it's more difficult than it is in other locales to get alcohol.
Well, then the plan for you and I to move to Utah is off. I can't believe you tried to dupe me into this. I'm done with you.
I had a lovely time in Utah. When we went there on tour, and that was actually the one of the last places I went outside of our home before the pandemic. We did Doughboys Live in Salt Lake City, and then the next night we did Doughboys Live in Denver. That was coincidentally, I've told this story before on Doughboys, that coincidentally was the same night that the NBA suspended its season, and that Tom Hanks announced that he had COVID. So it was really, it was like the night where it felt like, oh shit, it's all going down. And we were doing a live show in front of like 300 people in a tightly packed comedy club. Everyone's eating and normally would be laughing, not at our show. And so like it's a very inhospitable environment for this coming plague. And we're there, and then we had a show in Arizona planned that we canceled. We just, like, the next morning, we're like, hey, we can't do this anymore. And our agent was like, yeah, that's fine. And then I went home, and then we've been locked down ever since. It was really surreal timing in hindsight.
You know what's crazy? It was Norm's birthday the day of the NBA shutdown. And that's...
Wow.
Yes. So next week, the 11th, that was the day, which is his birthday, will be the 1 year. Because really, nobody took it... as seriously until the NBA shut down. And that's a fact. Yes. Nobody took it as seriously. And then the NBA shut down and everyone went, oh shit. That's exactly what happened. So really the NBA like saved our lives because like it just in more than one way. But it's like, that was it. That was like the big day. So we're going to go to the desert for 2 days in an empty house and all that kind of stuff. Very COVID safe. And we're going to go for 2 days to try to celebrate Norm's birthday because we had a party. We had to cancel everything. Same as you guys. We were like,
right.
it's irresponsible to do it. How crazy it's been a year. Oh my God. That just like hit me.
It's crazy. It also sucks so bad. It sucks so bad. It's been.
Can I say? Going
back and just like everyone's figured out how to manage, but it's been horrible.
Okay, so here's we're nearing the end of the podcast. Two things I want to do. One, what is something you learned about yourself over this past year in lockdown that you didn't know before? That's the first thing I want to ask.
Great question. I'm trying to think of this in terms of something, some bit of self-reflection as opposed to, you know, like a new thing I started doing. Because I did start meditating and that helped a lot, but I think that doesn't exactly address your question.
Yeah, because it's like, what did you learn about you?
Yeah, but something I learned about myself, I think, is that I will... Like, I really can, as much as I say, like, I like solitude, as much as I say I like being alone, I really do crave, or I really do like being around people, even if it's just the feeling of, I like to sit in a bar, just me and Natalie sitting in a bar, and we don't know anyone else, and it's a bunch of strangers around, and there's a basketball game on TV. It's just like, I miss that kind of experience, and it's not the kind of thing where I'd be like, oh, that's like a thing that I feel like I need. I need that sort of communal sort of bond of like feeling like I'm in a community. Like I go now, the equivalent now is like I'll just go to like a park and just like walk around the park just to sort of be around people, even if it's strangers, because like I just like feeling like I'm a part of something. So I guess what I'd say is that what I've learned is that I'm not as much of a hermit as I perhaps thought I was. I am someone who actually craves community and craves, you know, being a part of a social group.
Wow, what a beautiful gift to have realized that so that you can make those adjustments once we are on the other side of this and can see people again. That's fantastic. Okay, I'll say I learned that I care too much about what people think. And now that I'm disconnected, now that I'm disconnected from them, like what happened with you with the text, my mind can run wild and I'm realizing how dangerous that is. And I cared more than I thought I did. And I want to let that go. Okay, second and last question.
Wait, I want to steal yours now. I liked yours better. I think that's because I think that's also something I've realized.
Nick, that's such a thing my dad would do, your new friend. It's true though. You don't realize it until you're away from them and your mind goes crazy, because maybe you would think that before, but then you would see them and it'd be fine. So before your mind could wander too far, it would sort itself out. But now that you can't do that and you don't have that instant gratification or that reassurance, you're like, oh my God, this is killing me. And I'm like, I can't do this. I can't come out of this. People have died. A lot of the world falling apart. People are unhoused. There's all these things happening. And I'm thinking Nick Weiger's mad at me and that's my priority. Get a life, Alana. And by the way, just so everybody knows, Nick texted me the next morning at 7 a.m. to be like, yeah, I'm in. So not only did you text me back, but you made sure at the top of the day that we resolved this. And I love you for it, Nick. I really do. It was great. okay.
It's if I'm ever mad at you, you will know, because I'll get real short and be like, I'm not mad. That's the telltale sign that I'm mad. If I'm very in very curt sentences, letting you know that I'm not mad.
I like to let Norm know I'm mad by slipping a divorce paper across the table to him. Every time I keep it in my back pocket just in case. Okay, so you've stolen mine. We're both saying the same, care too much about what people think. We want to leave that to the side. which is great. My second final question. At the beginning of this, you, when asked on a scale of 1 to 10 how you're feeling, you decided to throw 7 out the window and you clocked in at an 8. So how would you say you're feeling now after having revealed some personal things, have a couple loves, made a good friend with my dad? How you feel now? Can be the same, higher, lower, whatever.
I'm very excited to get to know Mr. Johnston. What's your dad's first name?
You better believe it's Mike.
Wait, I'm sorry. What did you say?
Mike. Michael.
Mike. I'm very excited to get to know Mike Johnston better. I feel about the same. Is that okay? Is it okay if I'm like also at an 8? I'm just like, I think this was a nice stabilizing chat, and I kind of feel like where I was.
That's actually
not, I'm not trying to be perfect. A cop out. I think that's how I feel.
No, a lot of people clock in at the same. It's more, I like
how do
to
you
do
feel?
It because I've, okay, thank you so much for asking. I'm going to go ahead and say, because if I toss a 7 out the window, I will say I'm at an 8. I think I would have copped out and said a 7 when if I didn't push myself to really feel what I'm feeling. And what I'm feeling is really good. And I will say this, I'm also feeling, it's not a number, but I'm feeling at ease because I feel like I got to know you a bit better. We resolved the text issue and it really... is giving me we resolve the texting, and here's the thing, it's given me permission to not care as much, because look what happened when I cared. I got myself into a tizzy and I'm like, Alana, look at this, you talked it out, how beautiful of a conversation. It turns out there was nothing to talk out, and I learned that like my friend that I like so much is practicing self-care, and I made it about me. So I'm like, I've given myself permission at the end of this to let go of the jumping to conclusions and making assumptions, because how nice when you can let go that you can really now enjoy and focus on a friend and really take it all in, you know?
I 100%.
Yeah,
I love that sentiment. What a lovely chat. What a nice time talking with my friend Alana.
This and was such
learning
a great
about
chat.
More about Aww. Learning more about my new friend Mike.
Oh,
your dad.
Here's the thing: looks just like me. You're gonna love him. Okay, Nick, tell us. All my listeners already know your podcast, but tell us about your podcast and tell us where we can find you on social media for when you do make those viral posts.
Yeah, social media pretty much just using to promote things now, but that's what you got to do. At Nick Weiger on wherever you do it. I think just on Instagram and Twitter. I've got a couple podcasts. I got Doughboys, the podcast about chain restaurants with my good friend Mike Mitchell. And I got How Did This Get Played, the podcast where we play the worst and weirdest video games of all time with Heather Ann Campbell and Matt Apodaca. Check both of those out wherever you put things in your ear holes.
Ear holes, interesting way to say it. Okay, so ear hole sounds like invasive. It's like, I've never heard that, and it like, I cringed when I heard it. I was like, oh God, ear holes, get me out of here. Thank God the podcast is over. What a low note to end on. If you guys would like to follow the podcast, we are at Self Esteem Party on Instagram and Twitter. And if you'd like to follow me, I'm at the only Alana Johnson on Instagram and at Alana_Johnson on Twitter. Nick, I really can't thank you enough for doing this. This was such a fantastic episode, and you've really just made my day. And next time I text you, I'll pick another day of the week. And guess what? I will still be okay if you don't text back right away.
I'm glad to hear that. And I will just say it's been great to talk with you and great to stare into your husband's eyes for 70 minutes. A real dreamboat you got
you
on your
that?
Hands.
You hear that? You hear that, Norm? He's in!
Believe in yourself. Believe in your body.